Well, hey, welcome everybody. This is Dave. I'm really looking forward to collaborating with you and looking at the aspects that I think will be helpful to you from influence psychology, persuasion science, and neuromarketing. Thank you, first of all, for sending in the responses that you have. The answers or responses to those two questions really help me get a better idea of what kind of things you're interested in and can shape and guide some of my conversation and even illustrations. So I appreciate that. Those of you who haven't sent in responses to that, just take a minute and do that. It'll be helpful for all of us. I want to reserve a bit of time at the beginning and the end of each of our seminars for discussion to get an idea of what grabs you, what's important, questions and clarifications you have. First, any additional responses for those of you who haven't sent in yet responses to those two questions about what your most important focus of what you'd like answered during this series, and if you were to walk away at the end of this seminar series saying it was one of the most helpful ever, what would you walk away with? Notice how those are the two questions we ask a client at the beginning. What do you really want to focus on, and what do you want to walk away with? Any other responses at this point for either of those or both of those questions? Anyone? I'm interested in
Hi, good afternoon.
I was beginning to feel lonely. Go ahead.
How are you? Thank you so
much. I'm great.
This is
who?
Danny Bedoni again.
Hey, Danny, how are you?
I follow you. You're amazing, wonderful, and this is exactly right up my alley. And it's a situation that I've had that I'm trying to build my practice, but I think I need a competitive edge. So what is that competitive edge that we need to grab like a hook, a headline to get people really engaged in our coaching?
Okay.
Is that what you're asking, or should
I'm
going to
answer that question
very...
right now and not make you wait?
Okay.
I'd like everybody to draw a circle. Just take a clean piece of paper and draw a circle. Now, inside that circle, draw a stick figure. That stick figure is your client, or if you're selling products, your customer. Your challenge is to get inside the circle if you want to be listened to, because outside it, you're not likely to be heard or have an effective conversation. Now, here are some ways that you can stay outside that circle. Facts, logic, they're not powerful tools to alter opinions. Data is not a way to change mind. It's not how we decide. And if information were enough, we'd all exercise every day, eat mostly vegetables, be thin, have a lot of money saved up, and a lot of librarians would be billionaires. So giving clients information, telling them about your expertise, about your credentials, all the experiences you've had, none of that's going to get you inside the circle. Information actually, and I'll let you look at my blog about this, about the boomerang effect in neuromarketing, information can backfire because beliefs, as well as facts, are anatomical realities in our brain. So if you present something that doesn't fit with your potential client's belief, they're not going to say, aha, here's my answer. they're going to compare what you say to what they already believe. If it fits, they're going to find ways to validate it. If it doesn't fit, they're going to find ways to invalidate it. That's how our minds and brains work. And the smarter and more cognitively agile someone is, the more effectively they're going to be able to counter it, so they're going to be more entrenched in their belief than they were before you presented that new information that may oppose it. That's the boomerang effect. So what's going to get you inside that circle? You resonate with the client's challenge. In a coaching session, think about how you already do that. You resonate empathically with someone. They talk about, you know, I know I need to focus on what I do next for my practice, but I remember your microphone is picking up everything. And I have to remember that when I take a sip of my Diet Coke, so don't feel bad about it. So your client is wanting to have you resonate with their state of mind. Remember, state always comes first before strategy and story. So if you say, I hear how overwhelmed you are, let's look at what we can do together. You've empathically resonated. You've got inside the circle. And then you've established a framework to collaboratively look together to proceed to go someplace new. That's what you want to do. That stick figure now is your market. You have to figure out who that is specifically. This is where a niche is going to be most helpful, to know exactly what their challenge is, what their primary challenges are, where their ecosystems are, where their watering holes are, where the referral sources, the gatekeepers are for that person. So that's what we're going to be talking about. When you enter that circle, you're going to have to resonate with their experience and to understand how their minds and brains work, because it's not about giving them facts, information, and logic. So that's exactly where we're starting, and that's a good question. Your check is in the mail. That's a good question for us to begin, because it's a perfect frame for us to look at what is going to work and how can we do that in a way that is not salesy or pushy or anything that is counter to our identity as professionals, as wanting to help people and to catalyze growth. So great question, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about for 4 seminar hours. So thanks, Danny. Did that
thank
for
you.
Right now begin to address that?
Fabulous. I'm so thrilled and excited.
Okay, super. Thank you. Does anyone else dare to ask after that? Any other questions or prompts or anything that you'd like to be sure we talk about, or any other additional answers to those questions that you have? Well,
hi, this is Jaden. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm sorry. This is who?
Jaden.
Welcome. Hey, how are you?
Hi, good. Happy to be here. I guess my prompt answer to that question is kind of what you said, just figuring out how to be less salesy, less factual, and bring out the authenticity and passion in a way that kind of grabs some paying clients.
Okay. All right, great. And remember, the framework of that answer is it's all about the client. None of it is about you. That client, that potential client, does not care how many credentials, how much experience, what your reputation is, what your training is, how many books you've written or not. They want to know, what's in it for me? How are you going to be able to help me? So it's about the client. The focus is entirely on the client and where the client is at this moment, so then you can go someplace new together. And I've got some examples of that and some how-tos as we talk further. So excellent question to add on to Danny. So thanks. All right, I'm going to put us on a lecture mode now so you don't have to worry about taking a sip of your Coke or anything else, and we'll come back and have a discussion at the end. Okay, here's the premise and the overview of what we'll be talking about. practicing professionals, healthcare, law, finance, accounting, business, coaching, are well-educated and trained, but we may reluctantly acknowledge that we're also in business. We're able to help others achieve their goals, but we may still be learning how to translate that into doing the same for our own practices and businesses. So here's what we're going to do together. Innovative work in the mind, brain, and performance sciences can help us understand more about the topics of what we're going to talk about in these seminars on the psychology of influence, the neuroscience of persuasion, mindset mastery, and neuromarketing. And you'll see in the outline, those are the titles of each of the four topics, and you have an annotated outline so you won't have to take a bunch of notes. And how to apply each, hopefully to add immensely to your business success. Specifically, how these evidence-based strategies of the persuasion sciences can generate measurable improvement in engagement and sales for your professional services and products. So this is a system of creating rather than a method of hoping. So our first seminar is going to be about the psychology of influence. I'm going to begin each of the four seminars with a quiz. So here's the quiz. I think this is in your outline. Here's the quiz. The American Social, and jot down your answer. This is a multiple choice. And it's not a trick. Those of you who have trained with me before are aware that I occasionally do it. These have an answer. This is not a trick question. The American Sociological Review studied the hiring practices of three elite industries, law, investment banking, and management consulting firms, to discern the primary criteria for those who qualified to make the first round of interviews. Was it intellectual prestige, where the degree was obtained, in other words, grade point average, sharing similar experiences as the interviewer, expertise in the specific area of the position sought, or recommendations for the position? So jot down your answer. I'll tell you later, and I'm even going to tell you why I'm not telling you until later. So influence simply is defined as to enhance the likelihood of a choice, to heighten the possibility, the probability of agreement and predictability. Influence simply moves people to a desired outcome while helping them feel genuinely good about themselves and you. Remember, it has to be authentic. It has to be about the person and about their benefit. So I want to talk first about the brain science of story. Now, also here are four questions, and I'd like you to immediately jot down your answers. And I'm going to tell you sooner, because the reason I'm holding off on the answers is a neuroscience principle in action. So jot down your immediate thought, just a phrase or a word, to each of these four questions. What draws you into a story? See, you don't have time to think about the last episode of Clarice and what the plot was. Just immediately. This is about story. Secondly, what sustains your engagement as a listener or reader? What are you responding to when a story engages you? Again, first impression here. And finally, what determines bestsellers from non-sellers, even non-publishers? And a hint here. All four are the same answer. The answer to all four questions is we must want to know what happens next. Now, a story is hardwired in our brain. It's how we strategically make sense of an overwhelming world. It's how we understand things, how we remember. For a story to capture and sustain interest, from the first sentence, the reader or listener must want to know what happens next. When a story meets this neural requirement of novelty and anticipation, it engages and remains successful. Neuroscience shows that what draws us into a story and keeps us there is the firing of the dopamine system, the pleasure chemical, signaling that intriguing information is unfolding. This is what sustains our attention. So What do you want your reader or listener to walk away thinking about? What point does your story make? Think about your story can be a simple one-sentence hub statement, because the ideal response to that also engages the dopamine system, because the perfect response is, oh, tell me more. I'd like to hear some more about this. How do you want to change the way your listener or reader sees the world? If the recipient doesn't want to know what happens next, no matter how well it's crafted, it will not engage. CEO of Cisco, John Chambers, didn't communicate to employees, clients, or colleagues about selling switches and routers. He sold a story, a vision of an internet that changes the way we live, work, play, and learn. Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't sell coffee and lattes. He sold the concept of community, as he put it, a third place between home and work. Listen to how Steve Jobs convinced then-former president of Pepsi, John Sculley, to become CEO at Apple. They were on a balcony overlooking Central Park in New York City. Jobs simply asked Sculley, "Do you want to sell sugared water all your life? Or do you want to change the world?" The essence of influence is based in the brain's need for a story. We have a biology for reciprocation, an innate desire to bond, to connect. Story is an essential element of explanation to bring together and balance the emotional and the rational, both sides of the brain. If your business is not based on a story, you won't have a business. All good stories give a promise in the beginning, a promise that it's going to be worth your time. You invite the listener to join the campfire of the story. Once upon a time, I help practicing professionals create and implement strategies to achieve and sustain peak performance. That's a story. A little, couple more than 10 words. Storytelling, like life, has guidelines, not rules. In order to engage a listener or reader, write or tell a vivid story about your service or product or brand. Include aspects that would activate different parts of their brain: action, dialogue, sensory experiences. We'll return to that. Nancy Duarte studied the craft of storytelling and dramatic plot structure by analyzing hundreds of the most famous speeches of all time. And testing different story structures, she discovered a story pattern at the foundation of the most influential speeches of all time. It's a combination of what is followed by what could be for several sequences. She superimposed this sequence of those two patterns on the talks of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, Steve Jobs' well-known graduation speech, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, to name a few of the hundreds she studied. Each fit the same configuration pattern, a series of what is followed by what can be. So here's a way to create that influential story pattern. The context, the preface, is that your story has to be in your own voice. It has to sound like you talking. To create a clear and compelling story about your body of work, find a thread of connection with your audience as you craft a message. In other words, the challenge of the listener. It has to sound like you talking, not reading a script, to be genuine, authentic, as if the person is sitting across from you at the coffee shop. There are three story components of every good story: challenge, development, resolution. These three building blocks are common to all successful stories, from effective marketing to best-selling novels and films. As I describe these three story components, think about how you can apply them in two ways to your practice. having a brief discussion with a client about your services, and recommend your professional services after a discussion. And think, this is a sidebar that may need to move a little closer to the center. Every coaching conversation has these three components. The simple coaching model is based on these three story components: the challenge, the development, the resolution. Every sample session, even in 15 minutes, if it's successful, has these three components. So let's look at these building blocks. One is the challenge. Find the client's challenge, the problem, the pain, the focus the client wants specifically. Find the deep want or interest that's not fulfilled, what they want but they're not getting. And this is the key element. As you think about this, this is not something you're asking exactly, but why is this person going to pay you any money to talk with them? Why not a good bartender? The bars are beginning to open up now. Because it's something they're not able to do or be themselves, and this is specifically what you do and specialize in more than ever. In juxtaposition, in contradistinction to every other professional. This is the only thing they'll pay you for, what they're not able to do or be themselves. The foundation of effective influence is to first highlight the challenge and the unmet need that the client wants to focus on. So, know the audience or this person and three things: their deepest needs, their deepest desires, their deepest concerns. From this knowledge, describe a situation as, I'll say the audience, but this person knows it. What is? You are articulating what they already know and experience. This creates a bond of understanding, a common ground between you and the person, and readies them to hear your ideas for change. You're simply restating what you're hearing, and you both are at the same place. You've created a common ground because you've resonated with that. You've gotten in the circle. You've resonated with that person, and you both understand where the client is at this moment. Second, the development. The development of a story is to move from this common ground, this challenge, to a resolution, their desired goal. So for this, it's helpful to know a client's external goal and what achieving that goal means. Some of their motivation. The internal goal involves what achieving the external goal really means to them. So to further story development, consider, again, from the client's point of view, these questions. Will it give me what I want and need? Will it be worth it? These are questions a client is asking, not always consciously. Will I be able to justify it? Pay your fee, especially. Do I need it now? And three, the story resolution. You're going to collaboratively show them how to solve their challenge, how to co-create and address their issue by using your service or product. The mind and brain both seek closure. You help your client clearly and accurately associate a desired feeling or state with your product or service. The resolution needs a powerful ending. And remember this, we do whatever we decide to do because we imagine how we're going to feel when we do it. That's always the subtext for a client. So make it compelling and real. They will then authentically associate purchase with pleasure and no purchase with pain. More on this in the next seminar. We want emotionally, but justify logically. This is the way our brains work. And emotional comes first, always. Find the emotional reason, their reason, to do it now. You've resonated with their experience. That's going to give you terrific information. For example, notice the first thing I ask about this series, the what is. Do you have significant expertise and credentials but not enough clients? the what can be. You will learn how to systematically shape the primary reason people buy professional services and highlight what will develop and resolve it. As you move back and forth between what is and what can be, you can optimize your influence. So here's a specific application. You do a sample session with a client. At the end, you recommend professional coaching and your services. You can do it clearly and succinctly in three sentences. Summarize the client's challenge, how you can help, and your recommendation for mentor coaching, including the framework and the fee. Challenge, development, resolution. The fuel that propels these three building blocks of all compelling stories, challenge, development, resolution, is emotion. The best stories lead with the heart. That's why I emphasize first you want, if at all possible, to empathically resonate with the client. Whether it's excitement, whether it's overwhelm, whether it's worry, you want to know just in a simple way that you get what the client is experiencing, so you share that. If you're wrong, they'll correct you, but that resonates and creates a common ground. Emotional transportation is the complex system of action and reaction that operates within stories to move listeners. The stories that really work transport the listener emotionally. Think about your experiences. In any business context, if you fail to transport your listener emotionally, you'll lose them or simply get no response. Or if you use too many words or don't engage, they're going to start planning what they're going to have for dinner tonight instead of listening to the rest of your second paragraph. So let's look now at four primary tools of influence. One, the influential story pattern. Why is Apple so innovative? Year after year, they're more innovative than their competition, and yet they're just a computer and tech products company. They have the same access to the same talent, agencies, consultants, media. So what accounts for their phenomenal success, especially in the beginning when it was so innovative and so different? Why is it that Martin Luther King led the civil rights movement? He wasn't the only person who suffered in pre-civil rights America. He certainly wasn't the only great orator of the day. Why him? Well, as it turns out, there's a pattern. All the great and inspiring leaders and organizations in the world think, act, and communicate in a similar pattern that's the antithesis to others. A marketing message from computer companies like Dell, Hewlett-Packard, and dozens of others who have already bit the dust by now is, we make great computers. They're beautifully designed, state-of-the-art, user-friendly. Want to buy one? That's how most of marketing is done, to say what you do, say how you're different and better, and then hope somebody's going to respond by buying. But people rarely believe that what we do is as awesome as we believe it is. This is how Steve Jobs communicated about Apple. I think you always have to be a little different to buy an Apple computer. I think the people who do buy them are the creative spirits in the world. They're the people that are not just out to get a job done. They're out to change the world. And they're out to change the world using whatever great tools they can get. A lot of times, people think they're crazy. But in that craziness, we see genius. And we make tools for those kind of people. Think about the identity that gets activated, the ideals that get catalyzed in that kind of summation. Here's another example. In the summer of 1963, 250,000 people showed up on the mall in Washington, D.C. to hear Dr. King speak. No invitations, no website to check the date. How did that happen? Dr. King didn't go around telling people what needed to change in America. He went around and told people what he believed. And people who believed that he believed took his cause and they made it their cause. And they told people. And some of those people created structures to get the word out to even more people. 250,000 people showed up on the right day at the right time to hear him speak. How many of them showed up for him? Zero. Well, maybe three. But they showed up for themselves. It's what they believed about America that got them to travel on a bus for many, many hours, some of them, and stand in the sun in D.C. in the middle of August. It's what they believed, and it wasn't about black or white. 25% of the audience was white. No matter how talented, skilled, experienced, hardworking, and unique you are, unless you determine the major factors that influence the ways others think and act, your success will be limited. This does not equate at all with manipulation, but with consistently generating authentic personal and professional satisfaction while making the lives of others considerably better. I've seen some of the most talented and well-trained people in the world with stellar backgrounds, including academic backgrounds, and exceptional training, accomplish barely average results. I saw this in my 25 years practicing and teaching psychiatry, psychoanalysis. I've seen it repeatedly in the over 15 years now that I've been a professional coach. And I've seen people who master these skills soar personally and professionally. One key principle of influence is summarized by Dale Carnegie. Ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. This means that for the ultimate influence, we must first ask the question, what's in it for them? The greatest story command is this: make me care. Make me care emotionally, intellectually, aesthetically. Now, this is huge, what I'm about to say. Numerous studies, especially in the neurosciences, have the same message. To influence someone, it is essential to connect to their underlying identity. State-of-the-art neuroimaging and cognitive neuropsychology have demonstrated that we create ourselves, our sense of self, through our own narrative. A specific region of the left forebrain specializes in personal self-narrating actions and thoughts. This is the brain's origin of our identity, our sense of self. So, what are your prospects' fundamental ideals and needs? To make them care, you need to know what they already most care about. Home, status, family, adventure, security, mastery. The most powerful stories began by identifying a core ideal or concern of the prospect. Here's an illustration of that. One of the neuroeconomics labs that I correspond with has done repeated studies. You can put a group of people, controlled study, all the rigorous scientific stuff, and show them a number of objects. The most common was show them 10 objects. Hook them up with an fMRI so that you are measuring their brain's responses to what they're doing. You're especially looking at this center of the brain that has to do with identity. When they look at these 10 objects, you can predict with over 95% accuracy which of the 10 objects that person's going to buy, because it's the object that activates their identity. It's not what they want to do. It's who they are. You know, think about it. Think about the decisions you don't have to make anymore because it's just part of your identity. I've driven the same kind of car since I could afford it, 1977. I would test other, you know, for a while. In the last long period of time, I don't even bother anymore. It's just, that's what I do. That's who I am. People buy what they identify with. Neuroeconomic studies have shown that the biggest determinant of a purchase decision is when a product or service resonates with their identity. This activates the specific portion of the brain that synthesizes a sense of self. So the goal is to sell people who believe what you believe, not just to sell to people who need what you have. This is the unstated secret of Martin Luther King, Steve Jobs, Abraham Lincoln. This resonates with their core identity, their why. The people who they resonated with had the same why, same identity. This is why you bought 10 of your last 10 books. This is why when you have a favorite author, it doesn't matter what that person wrote. You know you're going to buy it because you follow that person. That person may, and, you know, I know this, that person may slip into a book about their high school losing basketball season or a cookbook way away from what they, but I'm still there. I've automatically bought it because I know I'm going to enjoy it because that's what I do. I read this guy, among others. When we feel a unity with others, we feel a shared sense of identity. This principle moves beyond simple similarities to embrace a kind of kinship of being together and a sense of unity that sacrifices personal interests for the welfare of the group. Now, here's the answer to quiz one. Those who made the final round, they shared similar experiences as the interviewer. Just as with personal decisions, we buy, hire, or affiliate with what fits our identity. Now, and the reason I didn't tell you is what we also know in neuroscience is that when we keep things suspended, instead of engaging a quick closure, it keeps curiosity, it keeps exploration alive and interesting. If you have time, look a little bit more at this in my blog that's archived that has Zingarnik effect in it, the Zengarnik effect. It'll say a little bit more. So here's an important factor. Cognitive studies have shown that the message itself is not directly responsible for change. Think about that. The message itself is not what causes people to change or to act. It's not what someone will say in response to your communication, but what they will say to themselves as a result of your communication with them. The direct result of change is due to their self-talk. What a person says to himself or herself after receiving a message. Think about how you more likely recall the comments you made to yourself more than the comments made to you in important situations. This is also another reason why we want to avoid negative messages. Now, here's another consideration. Dr. Robert Maloney, professor of ophthalmology at UCLA, was the first surgeon in North America to perform LASIK surgery. He had to help his patients overcome their fear of this, at that time, unknown procedure, which involves cutting a flap in the surface of the eyeball, the cornea. He had to give full disclosure, including negative possibilities, legally, that could easily discourage people from getting procedures they needed, all without testimonials of success stories from former patients. He listened really closely to his patients and discovered that the value proposition they actually cared about most was trust. They didn't want guarantees. They wanted connection. So Maloney began telling his patients, no matter what happens, I'm going to be here to take care of you. Then he'd tell them the story of what he expected would happen with their surgery. He would cover, as he needed to, the negative information about problems they might have to struggle with, but he would conclude his story with a resolution that satisfied their emotional needs. I'm never giving up on you, even if there's a problem. We're in this together, walking side by side. His emphasis, his framework, was the story of relationship and connection. His call to action was for his patients to trust him enough to make their leap into uncertainty. By now, Dr. Maloney has personally performed more than 50,000 vision correction surgeries. This is why I believe what my mentor coaching clients need to sense from me, that I will believe in you until both of us do, and I will walk side by side with you into and through your success no matter what. If we have time, we're going to talk about how to help clients with extreme success beyond what they've ever imagined, because they have no model for that, and they're going to need you then probably more than when they have problems, because they've got problems down. Trust is the foundation of developing rapport, of creating an influential pattern. Now, the second primary tool of influence, defining your story. In a dialectic between emotion and rationality, emotion wins hands down. This is basic human nature. Our emotional side, our emotional brain, is like an elephant, and our rational side is like the rider on top. The rider holds the rein, so it looks like he's in charge. But if the elephant and rider disagree about what direction to go, guess who picks? 180 pounds versus 12,000 pounds? Slam dunk. Bad metaphor. The first rule of telling stories is to give the listener an emotional experience. The heart is always the first responder, meaning the portal of entry is the amygdala in the midbrain. Metaphor and analogy, the most effective ways of doing that, are building blocks to evoke images and activate memory with all of its rich synergy and emotional associations. This brings the listener into the story as co-creator. Think about what we do at the very beginning of every coaching session. We establish a framework of collaboration which makes our profession unique among all professions. We ask the client, what would you like us to focus on, and where would you like us to end? That collaborative framework establishes a way of proceeding that is unique, because the client takes ownership of the story, and you and the client co-create that together. You become the catalyst, not the ghostwriter. The first rule of telling stories is to give the listener an emotional experience. So, define your story based on what someone really needs. Think about the specific needs of the people you want to influence with your body of work. Include the steps they need to address your problem. What's the first problem they need help solving? Once that problem's solved, where do they go next? Create a path of steps to help them realize their goals. Help them solve their problems, services, products, tools that they need. That's the only thing people pay you for, not a pretty website or initials after your name. And you've probably heard me say many times, if you really want to change or create a new habit or break an old habit, focus on the system, the map, not the goal. Everybody has the same goal. Every person and organization on the planet knows what they do. Some know how they do it, but a few people or organizations know why they do it, why they do what they do. And by why, I'm not talking about making a profit, but what is a purpose? What's your cause, your beliefs? When you get out of bed in the morning, what inspires you? The inspired leaders and organizations, regardless of size, industry, or focus, think, act, and communicate from the inside out. Perhaps more important than achieving a goal is who it makes you become to fulfill that goal. What this tells us is that people don't buy what you do. People buy why we do it. The goal is not to do business with everybody who needs what we have. The goal is to do business with people who believe what we believe. The why is your story, your mission. It needs to be bold, captivating, inspirational. Marketing and brand loyalty are about emotion way more than reason. Phil Knight, founder and CEO of Nike, said, "You know, you can't explain a whole lot in 60 seconds. But when you show a picture of Michael Jordan, you don't have to. It's that simple." Sometimes you can give somebody all the facts and the figures, and they say, "Well, I know what all the information and details say, but it just doesn't feel right." That phrase, whether they say it or not, "feel right," comes from the part of the brain that controls decision-making. It's not the part of the brain that generates logic, language, or reason. Or sometimes you say you're leading with your heart or have a gut feeling. Now, we know your heart and your gut are not decision-making body parts, but they're metaphors for our limbic system. It's all happening in our limbic system. Since people respond to why you do what you do, the need to know why you do what you do is crucial for them to be a part of what it is that you do. Our most immediate intuitive response to someone is based on two things, and think about your experience: confidence and connection. Confidence is the perception of strength and capacity to make things happen. It commands our respect. It is a state of mind, and a state of mind is more instantly contagious than the fastest virus. Connection is the client sense that you really get their feelings and interests and view of the world. Empathic resonance. When people project this connection, this understanding, we like and support them. Strength and connection are complementary, not opposites, are not mutually exclusive. Amy Cuddy at Harvard did seminal work in this area to find that emotional responses to people who project both strength and warmth are the most effective and influential. So the third primary tool of influence, your body of work. Three crucial questions to consider. What are your clients' primary needs and challenges? What is it that makes you distinct, unique, and memorable? And what is the premium the client gets by doing business with you? The sciences of mind and brain show us how good communication involves four elements: clarity, brevity, simplicity, humanity. This is how language works best in both speaking and writing. The first person to come up with this was the guy who wrote the Bible for the art of writing, William Zinder, before neuroscience studied it. When Maurice Sendak wrote his book, Where the Wild Things Are, he worked for 10 years on a book with 338 words. Now, I've been accused of approaching that number per sentence. For example, when he's ready for the action to begin, he states very simply and vividly, "Let the wild rumpus start." Perfectly chosen, crisp, simple, powerful words. Competitive advantage requires creating a perception of exceptional differentiation and then accentuating it. When you're successful at accentuating your market uniqueness, the consumer will redefine the competition as less desirable. Your brand is the cohesive story of your business, the identity of each service and product that people associate with the experience and expectation of your brand, and that brand may simply be your name. The fourth primary tool of influence, mindset. This is so important, we're going to spend the entire third seminar on developing it, but for right now, focus on the experience you deliver. A winning business engagement creates an emotional connection with the consumer to align with you. A story told by Simon Sinek, author of Start With Why, observed that all the signs of panhandlers had a similar message: I'm needy, please help me. He believed that by changing the homeless person's message, he could change the results. Simon found a street beggar in New York who's willing to work with him on his experiment. In talking with the woman, he learned that she received an average of $20 to $30 during each of her 8 to 10-hour days. If she got to $30, she considered it a really good day. Simon convinced her to change her sign. Instead of focusing on her situation, homeless and hungry, he helped her craft a sign. If you only give once a month, next time think of me. The results were that in 2 hours, she collected $50. When the message shift focus from her needs to focus on the experience of the passerby, that's what significantly increased the results. This emphasizes that the focus needs to be on the person making the decision, not on the needs of the recipient, either the presenter or the seller. Now, the messages we send are subtle and often operate in a subliminal way. People are influenced, positively or negatively, at an unconscious level. When we send out messages that are about us, the natural things that we tend to, the quality, the benefits, the feature, the training, all the things that go into everything we've done, the services, we're going to receive less response, though. The more we take as point of reference the recipients of the message, remember, the stick figure in the circle, your challenge first to get inside that circle, then you communicate and go someplace new once you've established the common ground of being in the circle together. The more they'll be willing to join in and create mutual fulfillment. So think about the messages you communicate. Rather than beginning with the benefits of what you do or the facts or the figures, begin with the issues of recipient, the pain point, the need, the challenge. What will someone pay you money for? They're going to pay you for what they can't do or be themselves. So find out what that is. Get them to tell you. Rather than telling someone about your experience, your credentials, your training, focus on what's in it for them. Have I said that before? No patient ever came to work with me previously as a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst because I was named one of the top doctors in America. They didn't care. No client has subsequently come to work with me as a mentor coach because I've written 24 books. They don't care, and they shouldn't. They want to know if I care about them, if I can help them. They want to know what's in it for them and get the sense that I confidently believe in both of us to do that, that I'm loyally and passionately 100% dedicated to their success. Theodore Roosevelt put all of this very succinctly. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. It's been said that there are, and this saying came out of Texas. It's been said that there are two things people don't want to know how they're made, laws and sausage. And growing up on a farm, I can attest to one of those. Add this as the third. All of your qualifications and degrees and training and experiences. Your clients want to know one thing, what's in it for me? Remember that our brains release dopamine, the pleasure chemical, when we anticipate a positive experience, just like before we spend money or when we anticipate a positive result. This emphasizes the role of hope and expectation in your message. Dopamine is not released, as it was once thought, as a reward for an experience or because of doing something. It's released in anticipation of something. This is how, you know, shopping can be addictive, how we keep seeking the same kind of hit. But this is the hope and expectation in a message to really get someone to listen, to begin to collaborate with you. Your message and mindset both center on your why. The most common difference between the best and everyone else is a compelling reason for commitment, the why. Martin Luther King gave the I have a dream speech, not the I have a plan speech. Meaning comes from contribution, something you believe in that makes a difference. You have to know what you're worth. I believe that when someone works with me in mentor coaching, that it will make a significant difference for the rest of his or her life. No strategy replaces integrity and caring to make a difference by connecting with others, to be genuine, authentic. Your why determines what you focus on and what you don't. The number one thing about the successful 1% of people, they are compelled by goals and dreams, having a why. People have a need to feel a sense of belonging. Before people decide what they think of your message, they're going to decide what they think of you. The drive to affiliate is among our primary needs as humans. A fundamental effectiveness is the connection, to be understood, to make a difference for the other person. So here is a summary application of the components that we've just talked about. This is in your outline, but just kind of listen to see how it sounds to you at this point. From birth, our brain's primary goal is to make causal connections. If this, then that. It's an unconscious operating system. We don't think in abstract, but in specific detail. When something is more easily pictured or experienced, it seems more real and believable. An active verb tense makes an experience more concrete and believable than a passive verb, which is abstract. Our brains are hardwired to want to be a member of a group, to connect. A good brand shares the same impact as we become confident in the predictability and trustworthiness of a brand. Every brand is a story including history, expectations, promises, and emotions. Your brand is a story. Stories are more important than facts in changing our minds. Passion brands create passionate followers. We buy something when it activates the part of our brains associated with our sense of self, our identity. We buy what is consistent with our identities. Your authority is crucial. Your authenticity is the most crucial thing. Your authenticity is the most valuable gift you have to offer to yourself, and to care, authentic and dedicated. So, let the wild rumpus start. I'm going to take us off of lecture for discussion mode, if you'll move the background. Clarification, thoughts, or questions about anything you've heard?
Okay, it's PJ.
Yes. Hey, how are you doing, PJ?
Oh, man. That was so powerful. It brought a lot of things. A couple of things I've had that did for me.
PJ, could you get off the speakerphone and put it right up next to your mouth?
Okay. Is this better?
All right, then. Do that with your clients, too, as well as every time you join. Go ahead.
That must have been my background noise. I thought it was, anyway.
Well, I can tell that. It had an accent. It had that Texas accent, PJ. Go ahead.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay.
That's bad.
PJ, you need to be real still instead of twirling around, also, if you don't mind, because there's static.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, I am. I heard
you're good.
Too.
Go ahead.
Okay, a couple of little things. It reminded me of one statement from Covey. Seek first to understand and then to be understood. I love that. Also, I could relate easily to the tangible examples you gave of hard things we see and feel and touch, and transfer that concept to the intangibles of coaching. Last thing is a very, very short story. I was buying a baby carrier years ago, and I went in with one carrier in mind and came out with something that cost 3 times as much because the salesperson sold me trust and safety and growth. Those things I could not see.
Exactly. Exactly. And you remember that, and I bet it would take you 15 minutes to find whatever you bought, if it's still there. Yeah.
The one that, I was going to buy was really crappy compared to what I walked out with.
Okay. We're going to come back to that concept. So you've just introduced a whole other area that I think is really important. So thanks, and it's great to hear from you.
Thanks.
Super. Who else? Questions, thoughts, clarifications? Anyone else?
I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the whole kind of social media stigma that people want instant gratification and how that's kind of taken a play into society now when thinking about hooking them and delaying the gratification and kind of waiting to give them the answer like we were talking about earlier.
Well, what is it? Can you put in one word or at least no more than three words about what it is that hooks you about social media? What is it that's so compelling that keeps you coming back again and again? How would you describe that in under three words?
Infinite information.
Is it information or is it effectiveness?
The effectiveness is probably better.
Okay. That's the most basic desire that we have as human beings, is to be effective. I've seen directed, and again, I'm going to ask a mute because I hear noise and movement. If you don't mind muting until you're ready to talk, please. I can go back on lecture mode, but I'd rather keep it open. I'm going to go back on lecture mode because somebody's, I think, walked away. The most basic desire that we have as human beings is to be effective. I've seen direct infant observation studies of kids as early as 3 months of age where there is a demonstrated effectance pleasure, the pleasure at being a cause. When they do something and they see a result they've caused, there is a pleasure in that. That is the basic motivation for everything that we do. And that carries through everything in adulthood. That's also why a single session in coaching can be so compelling, each session, because you're asking the client what they want to focus on and where they want to get to. You're helping them to be effective. When you do a sample session and you prep them with that and follow that model, you're going to have a much higher likelihood of a conversion because you've shown them what coaching can do. This is a small piece, a sample, but it's about the sense of effectiveness of creating a system. That's what you do. Think of what do you look for when you post? How many likes did I get? How much responsiveness? How effective was I in engaging? Did I get in the triple digits of likes this time? If I put my grandkids, is that what it takes to get triple digits? But enough about me. Think about that and what it takes to be effective. Think about that in terms of what we've talked about thus far to apply. We're going to have to stop. We're, I know, a couple of minutes over. But the tools of influence, persuasion, neuromarketing are about how you can be effective, but it's ultimately how can you help your client to be effective with whatever they're dealing with your service or your product. You're providing a model of effectiveness that they can internalize and use themselves in their own way with them and their story as a point of reference. So that's the essence of what you're doing and engaging in coaching and even in engaging someone to do coaching with you. How can you help them be effective? And the answer is it's something they haven't been able to do or be themselves, so they're willing to pay you for it. So I think that question really brings it into a sharp focus. Thank you all very much. And if you haven't responded, would like to, I'd welcome that. It's helpful to me. Send answers to those two questions. And I look forward to that. We'll pick up right here next time. Thanks so much. Have a great week. Take good care of yourselves.